The Johnson Wax Program.
Makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, and Johnson's Car New present the brilliant conductor-composer of melody, Meredith Willson, and MGM's noted young commentator, star, and teller of amazing tales, John Nesbitt, our vocalists, Connie Haynes and Bob Carroll, and our guests for the evening, the King's Men. Ladies and gentlemen, this program by Mr. Nesbitt and Mr. Wilson is sent to you by S.C. Johnson & Son, makers of Johnson's wax finishes for the home and industry. But now, here is John Nesbitt.
Thank you and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the second edition of this new series. Just to be sure that you know everybody, Connie Haynes, our feminine singer, is one of those shapelies at whom most of the time we all look dreamily. Bob Carroll is the kind of good-looking baritone who always wins the girl in the musical movies and rides away with her on a horse singing Rio Rita. Bob, not the horse. And Meredith Wilson, of course, our music master, is well...
Meredith's
impossible. Hello, Meredith.
Hello, dear boy. Why, it's a comfort to know that while I'm up on the stand conducting the music, you are down here saying fine, worthwhile things about me.
Common decency, Meredith, common decency. What's on the menu tonight?
Well, for the salad, we'll have some sentimental music in which we present our theme melody for the first time as a full-fledged love song.
Sentimental? Well, that'll be fruit salad, won't it?
Mm-hmm. And for the meat course, one of your dramatic specialties.
Oh, yes. The roast beef, of course.
Yes, or the ham. And, for dessert, we'll have the entire company in America sing.
My mouth is watering heavily, Meredith. The salad. In days of yore, ladies and gentlemen, when men had good manners and believed that women were angels, this is actually the way they said, I love you. Or rather, as Meredith would have said it in Grandfather's Day.
Miss Connie, I beg that you won't be offended if I... call you Miss Connie. Miss Connie, having known and I may say, having worshipped you for the past 11 years and 3 months, this very evening I joined your father in the library. And there, Miss Connie, after examining me as to my financial condition, he tendered me...
Oh, happy hour!
He tendered me... he tendered me his consent.
Oh, I know, Mr. W. Your mother and I listened at the door.
And for many a generation, though the music and the words changed, we men held our American women high in the altar of respect. We proposed in solemnity, and incidentally, there were very few divorces. And then, 20 years ago, came bathtub gin, came trucking on down, and flaming youth. But today, nonetheless, the boys shoulder the enormous burden of war and go marching off to stand before the flag. And youth, once again, is no longer ashamed of sentiment. It was because he sensed the new quiet mood of young people that Meredith recently wrote a new popular song on which we base our program theme, and which we hear for the first time now as a full-dress number. It's light, of course, but full of the simple, direct sentiment that marks the hit tunes of the summer, and it's called 32 Bars of I Love You.
You'll find my song has no ending.
was the premiere of Meredith's new song, 32 Bars of I Love You. Last week, you may remember, we began our department of lost music, in which we have been rediscovering songs which should have been hits, but for some mysterious reason never got before the public. Music that never had a chance. A number of years ago, in a house on the Great American Plains, there lived a woman who loved the West. Now and then, she wrote a song about it. Not long ago, Meredith heard a portion of one of these songs in a movie, made inquiries, and located a copy of the entire number. He believes it to be potentially one of the great Western ballads. It's a lazy cowboy song, such as the hands might hum to themselves as they ride home in the darkness after a long day at the roundup. And so it is called Roundup Lullaby. And this is really a lost song in a sense, for not long ago the woman who wrote it, Gertrude Ross, passed away without knowing what a great potential song success lay hidden here. The orchestra with the King's Men in Roundup Lullaby. Nomination for our Department of Lost Music. You must remember that one, the Roundup Lullaby. We hope that through our presentation it may find a rightful place among the folk songs of tomorrow. Our next department embraces the all-important subject of conservation and protection. And what Harlow Wilcox has to say to you in exactly 48 seconds, you will find worth your while. Harlow, please.
We hear a lot today about conservation. To many people, it seems to be a new idea. Certainly an important one now with a war to win. But to a great many housekeepers, conservation isn't anything new. They've been practicing conservation every time they've protected their linoleum floors with Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat. Glow Coat has already increased the life of perhaps a million linoleum floors. It actually makes linoleum last 6 to 10 times longer than if it were unprotected. That's real conservation, isn't it? And besides that, there's another big saving. Many hours of work. Because Glow Coat is so easy to apply, and it polishes itself without rubbing or buffing. And of course, Glow Coat makes floors beautiful and easy to keep clean. All good reasons for protecting your linoleum floors regularly with Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat.
One of the most amazing true stories in the passing parade we sketch for you tonight. The story of a Chinese hero and saint who is actually an American Marine. It is 1859. China is writhing under the greatest and most terrible civil war in the entire history of the world. In this rebellion, 20 million people are murdered. 600 villages and cities completely erased from the map. China is in the grip of outlaw enemies as frightful and ruthless as it has ever known, and will ever know again until the more frightful Japanese strike it in the year 1937. On the day that the bandit armies had finally reached Shanghai and begun to destroy it, off an American sailing ship in the harbor got one of the toughest sailors who ever shipped out of New England. A mahogany-fisted, loud-cussing, salt-cured, belligerent Yank who would fight you with his fists or his feet or a tomahawk or a knife or a belaying pin or with his teeth. His name was Fred Ward, a very tough lad. And seeing that a lot of fighting was going on in Shanghai, he naturally decided to join the fun. One day in June 1860, a great Chinese banker named Taki was informed that a young American wanted to see him. The young American was Fred, and he had an offer to make. He himself would personally put down the terrible rebellion, provided he was paid $45,000 in gold for each city he captured. The banker stared at him. "What will you do for soldiers?" "I've got a whole blamed army," said Fred, and the Chinese shrugged his shoulders, and being a loyal patriot, agreed to pay Ward what he asked. Whereupon Ward went down to the waterfront, to the saloons, the ships, the lowest and toughest dives in the hard-boiled city of Shanghai, offering $100 a month for men who liked to fight. And by nightfall, he had an army. Just 200 men. American sailors, ex-marines, deserters from the French and English navies, Filipinos, Chinese pirates, the rowdies, the drunks, and the bandits of the underworld. But they all loved to fight. They might sleep in the gutter at night, but let anyone reflect upon their honor, and they'd tear into pieces. Ward lined them up by cuffing them and arming them with rifles, old Colt revolvers, Malay Crees, and quite a few brass knuckles, and led them at once toward the walls of the city of Sung Kiang. There were 11,000 of the enemy within those walls. Ward found an old cannon, wheeled it up to the city gates, and blasted away. He had two officers, one a Filipino named McCaney and one a Yankee named Forrester. And he had 200 nameless pug-uglies to conduct a whole war. For 2 hours, the battle raged. When it was over, 62 men were dead and 101 wounded out of the original 200. Just 27 were all in one piece. But Fred Ward had captured Sung Kiang. In 2 years of this kind of mad fighting, the man actually captured 14 cities. His army kept growing in size, and throughout China was known as the ever-victorious army. At Yingxiaping, he defeated a force of 100,000 with 500 of his ruffian fighters. And he went a little mad. While still alive, he became a legend. And he himself began to believe that no bullet could touch him. He would actually stand out in front of his ranks during the thick of the fight, bullets raining around him, leaning on a Malacca walking stick, studying the situation and sometimes screaming with ribald laughter. Suddenly a strange change comes over him. Cold laughter. suddenly a strange change comes over him. It begins when he no longer demands money for his fighting. Somewhere along the road of 100 flaming battles, he himself has become part of China, has come to love and understand the warm-hearted people who die so willingly for their freedoms, for the freedom of China. And as clearly as if a voice speaks it into his ears, he realizes that when China needs him no more, the mysterious thing that protects him from death will be withdrawn. On the 20th of September, 1862, his vagabond troops are besieging the city of Tsiki. It is the 15th city on his list, the last city in the hands of the enemy. Ward stands out in the open field, dressed up in a uniform like a rainbow, which he's assembled from half a dozen costumer shops, waving his Malacca cane in the air and making wisecracks. He suddenly turns to his lieutenant with an expression of amazement on his face. Forrester looks at him. Well, what's the matter? Ward reaches out and clutches his shoulder. Don't laugh when I tell you this, but I've actually been shot. Whereupon Ward fell to the battlefield a dying man. His job was finished, his destiny finished with him. Late that night, he made his peace with his God and death took him. But not until the vagabond leader learned that his last battle had been victorious. His men tried to find an American flag to cover his body. None could be found. But the Chinese tore apart red ceremonial garments of silk and took the blue sashes from the statues of saints in the temples. And in a few moments, 100 Chinese women had made up a gigantic American flag. When the hour came for burial, the Chinese people threw open the gardens of their Confucian temple. And in the ground that was holy to them, they laid the Yankee warrior. Later, they raised him his own temple and read the rites that made him a real Chinese saint. He is to this day one of the beloved heroes of China. And whenever the American squadron of flying tigers goes out to meet the overwhelming odds of battle with the Japs, the old Chinese will say to them, "May the spirit that sent Frederick Ward to us in our need ride on the wings of your airplanes and keep you like him forever victorious." And that's the story. But perhaps the last chapter could simply be told tonight, July 7th, 1942. Millions of Chinese people again standing at the very edge of doom, asking us tonight not for shoes, for they go barefoot, asking us not for meat, for millions of them have never even seen it. They ask only a little bread, a little medicine for their wounds, a little hope. Lest we have too many words and not enough notes is another chapter in Meredith Wilson's musical history of the songs of America. And Meredith had better do his own announcing here, for in regard to this music, I, my friends, am a total ignoramus.
Why, John, that's one of the most wholesome things you ever said.
I bet you'd say that.
I say when a commentator admits that he is ignorant about anything, it gives old Wilson a very warm feeling indeed. But it's all quite simple. In fact, simplicity is the keynote of all the music we call America Sings. These are the melodies we danced to in nightclubs, or sang in rumble seats, or even whistled in the bathroom. John, do commentators whistle in the bathroom or just narrate to themselves? A lot of people look down their noses at our popular music and call it common. But I like to think it's democratic. So we're playing a group of tunes that are so familiar that I don't even have to list the titles, but ones which I believe can become the folk songs of tomorrow. Thank you.
like your family. They don't make a hit with me. I don't want to bother lending money to your father while your mother's relations live on me. I don't think your Uncle John ever had a collar on. You're a perfect lady, but when I get hitched for life, I want an orphan.
Iron Mountain.
Oh, then the Iron Mountain, village of misfits.
trying to keep up with the servant's sister, the old S.P. Running like well, trying to make connections with the M and St. L.
And then the M and St. L, I must confess, trying to keep up with the Hartford Express, the Hartford Express. Going insane, trying to make connections with the Boston and Maine.
And then the Boston and Maine feed them all. Trying to make connections with the cannonball. The cannonball, run and find.
Trying to make connections with that old gal of
present a commercial message at this point this evening, but rather ask that you listen to what Mr. Nesbitt has to say. John?
Ladies and gentlemen, the people of China and the Americans working with them there are asking us for help tonight. Each time you buy a war bond, you are helping to send them guns and planes and tanks to rain death on the invaders. And if tonight also you can send some pennies, dimes, or dollars to the United China Relief, 1790 Broadway, New York City, you help the uncomplaining, decent people of China to go on living. And somewhere in China, a human being may someday say, because of you, China will be a happy land for 1,000 orphans. Until with Meredith Wilson, we join you again a week from tonight. This is John Nesbitt bidding a very good evening to you all.
It's Carla Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is Chicago, WMAQ.